Welcome, welcome, welcome to episode number 2 of the Chikandi Podcast Show. I am your host, Demetrius Burton. Thank you for joining me today. We will be discussing, as promised at the end of episode number 1, addressing race and trauma on the athletic field. And we'll be doing so with a very, very special guest. Ms. Calvalyn Day has joined us for a conversation centered around trauma, and specifically trauma in athletics. So look forward to sharing that conversation with you. But before we do, as always, want to give a shout out to Double Impact for that nice beat you get to hear before, during, and after the show. And I also want to give a shout out to the dynamic duo, the other dynamic duo, one in Chicago, the other in LA. That would be Braden and Jordan, the production and editing team behind the podcast. Please, please, please visit polar-sound.com. If you have any technical sound, audio, visual, I'm saying they do it all. They do all for me, and they do it very, very well. So please, please give them a look if you have any needs. Again, thank you for joining us for episode 2. Where we're going to be talking about race and trauma on the athletic field. Braden, can we get that dope beat again?
Thank you again. And first thing, I want to just talk a little bit about your background. Let the people know who you are, your skills, your knowledge, experience, and whatever you want them to know. And feel free to spend up to 5 or 7 minutes because I want to hear again about it.
Sure. So my name is Calvalyn Day. My background that people are most interested in is that I was a school counselor by trade. So I've worked in and around schools, youth serving organizations, churches, nonprofits, you name it, for about 20 years. I'm a preacher's kid. So I started my youth work, you know, like if you're a preacher's kid, as soon as you're old enough to hold the baby, you are in the daycare ministry. So I've been doing that for a long, long time, but went back to school when my kids were a little bit younger and got my master's degree in educational counseling, and then learned a lot of the science behind what I was seeing in the church and in the Girl Scouts and the different after school programs and so forth that I have been working in for so long. So I've always had a knowledge of some of the things that have to do with trauma. Working in the school system, though, I realized that everybody didn't have that background. So most people who come into education do not necessarily know about the trauma that students experience. And so a lot of times when I was first starting out, people were completely oblivious. They didn't understand what was going on, why kids were doing certain things, why certain things that could work on one side of town couldn't work on the other side of town. And so that led me to really want to do more. And that's how I started my business. So I work specifically with individuals and organizations who recognize the impact of trauma and want to help people to lead their best lives.
And of course, that's how our relationship started.
Correct.
I ain't no shame in my game. I don't anymore. I fired her only because, that's another whole nother story. But we met through my therapist. And again, I have a therapist, a mental health professional to help guide me. And I am screaming from the top of the mountain. I have a therapist. Whew. And I'm so thankful for that. But that's how we met. And just understanding what you do and how well you do it led us to develop an exciting relationship is what I'm trying to come up with as far as what we've been able to come up with and what we're going to be able to do. But before we get to that particular part, can you talk a little bit about your experience specifically in the school setting and the counseling? I'm going to assume it was here in the city of Indianapolis. Can you talk a little bit about the grade level, the demographics of the children you serve?
Okay. So my degree is from IUPUI. So I kind of took the scenic route to the counseling world. So when I graduated from high school, I went to Ball State and I was going to be a psychologist. Didn't really know what I was going to do with that. I was a teen mom, so I went away to college for a year, realized that it was a lot harder to raise a child and be a single parent living in family housing. So I came back home, ended up getting my cosmetology license and working for a little bit before I finished the long route to my master's degree, probably about 10 years later, maybe a little bit longer than that, maybe 10 or 15 years later. And so my internships and practicum and all that was all around Indianapolis. So I've worked public school, I've worked charter school. I've worked preschool, so anywhere from pre-K all the way up to 12th grade I have worked. I also was a professor at IUPUI for a while, so I've taught at the graduate level as well. My passion in terms of education is working with what I call those tough kids, the at-risk kids, the kids who have the history of trauma, who, you know, have the challenging behaviors. You know, I really enjoy working with those kids because they have, you know, typically have wonderful personalities and so much locked inside of them that's oftentimes protected by some of those challenging behaviors that they exhibit. So I really enjoy working with those kind of tough kids, which when you like those kids, they tend to like you. And so the teachers will call you to come down to the classroom or send them down to talk to you. And so it really, you know, it allowed me to really be a support for those kind of, you know, for those kids. And so I enjoyed doing that. My bulk of my career was probably in middle school counseling, which is another thing. Kids, typically people are like, oh, I'll do little kids, I'll do big kids, but I don't want to do those kids in the middle. And I tend to enjoy middle schoolers. So I worked in the middle school for a while as well, but that's my background. So my background is all ages and stages. But just those toughest kids are the ones that I usually end up working with.
And I think that's kind of one of our spiritual connections, because I too tend to gravitate toward that bunch. Although I didn't describe myself as a tough kid growing up, I did put myself in some tough challenges by some things I've done. I did put it that way. So yeah, I'm grateful for folk like you who choose to work with folk like us.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. Having said that, can you talk a little bit about just the basics of trauma? What is it? What does it look like? And for the person who has very little understanding, just give us the basics, please.
Yeah. So a couple of things. Normally when people say, talk to me about trauma or what is trauma, what they mean is what does it mean when trauma affects a person? So I usually say like the traumatic events are those challenging things that happen. The traumatic impact is what happens to us, so our experience. So the traumatic events can be anything from a illness, a death, abuse, you know, a catastrophic event, a pandemic, any of those type of things. So the traumatic impact is variable from person to person. The example I sometimes will use is two people can have a car accident, but the impact on each of those individuals can vary wildly, right? So if I have a car accident and I've got PLPD insurance and now I don't have a car and now I can't get to work and now I can't pay my rent, that's one impact. If I have a car accident and I have great insurance and I have disposable income and I can go right out tomorrow and rent a car and then I can get a new car next week, my life isn't really impacted. So the same thing can happen to two different people and have two different impacts. So trauma is super subjective, but the most important thing to think about is what resources does a person have access to help them bounce back from a traumatic experience, and how do they view themselves as a result of that traumatic experience?
You just gave me an answer to a question a beloved woman to our family community asked me probably 35 years ago.
Wow.
And it was in relation to, I grew up with two brothers and a sister in my immediate household, although I have more brothers and sisters. Love them all. Of course, we were raised in the same household, received the same love, received the same sources. But the outcome in, I guess I can say quality of life to some extent. My life is not necessarily better than theirs, but there are some places in my life where I am literally able to afford more conveniences, because one of these kids should have a higher education. So I'm able to attain more resources. I mean, just, but the point is, we both experienced life in a similar setting, but the traumatic experiences had different outcomes. So when she asked me, why did he do this or they do this and you did this, that's the answer. It varies from person to person. You may be breathing the same air, but you ain't the same body.
Correct. This is that, you know, why is one person in a family diabetic and not the other? Why is one person need glasses and not the other? The way our genetics mix together, even if we have the same mom and the same dad, the way those things mix together can it's kind of like the rolling of the dice. And the way we will view certain things throughout our lives and our experience will change too. Now, there's some things that we know will help us make things better so that we're more protected or less insulated from the traumatic things that happen. And there's some things that typically will make it harder. So we do know that, you know, science tells us that. But some of this stuff is, you know, we have kind of looked at it as like, well, they had, you know, they had good parents, they had a good life, they shouldn't have gone down this path. You don't really know how they experienced certain right. things. It's really about paying attention to that experience.
And so you never know what goes on in somebody's house when the door's closed. No idea. So we got traumatic events and traumatic impacts. The events are things. I don't want to minimize life impacting events as things, but for the sake of simplicity in conversation, we'll refer to them as traumatic things that happen. And then the impact is just that. How does it play out in your real life experiences? And that's really what I want to get at, because I think, in my professional opinion, based on my experiences in the formal educational setting as a teacher and a coach, and like you, I have experiences from elementary through high school. I haven't taught in grad classes yet. So not that this is a competition, I'm just saying I don't have that experience. But the point is, I too have observed and interacted with the impacts that the students have experienced from the trauma. And one thing that I'm not sure when I started consciously doing was understanding how my traumatic events and those impacts helped me deal with the students. So can you talk a little bit about what you've observed in the school setting as far as on the positive side, how teachers have been able to, what is the correct verb is, what do teachers do with trauma? Because we sure as heck ain't treating it.
The goal is to make sure, not that you're treating trauma, but that you're just providing that safe space for children who are dealing with trauma. That's really the goal. So you don't have to be a therapist. You don't have to understand all of the treatment modalities or anything like that. But you want to just assume that they have trauma, and you know that there's someone in your classroom that has trauma. So you assume that there's someone on the field. There's assume that someone that has come for tryout that has a history of trauma. And recognize that this might be a minor impact where they really have lots of coping skills and they can really, you know, interact just as a child who has never experienced trauma. But then there will be other kids who will show up and, you know, of no fault of their own, really will struggle to try and keep up or to be able to interact in the same ways because of that history of trauma. So you just want to recognize that it's going to be there, assume that it's going to be there. And then so you want to structure your classroom or your program so that you're aware of that. A lot of times what we do is we structure for the quote unquote normal kids. And so then we have to come up with accommodations for those kids who have either special needs or a history of trauma or something to that effect. If we really structure our classrooms and our programs as if we know that there's going to be kids who have those difficulties, then if we have a child who doesn't have that, it just makes it easier. So just really assume that that's going to be there. And look at what you can put in place for those kids. And then once you've done that, it makes it so much easier for, you know, for everyone, really.
I'm a literal thinker, big on semantics. So when you talk about the quote unquote normal child, is implied that they don't have any traumatic experiences from a teacher's perspective. Right. I'm not implying you stated that. But isn't that in itself a fallacy? Like, part of the human experience includes trauma on some level. Like, trauma is just a normal part of life, isn't it?
Right. So to a certain extent, I think most people have experienced traumatic things. But remember, it's the experience of it is subjective. So whether or not they experience it as a trauma is based upon their access to resources and their perspective. So a lot of people don't consider things that they've experienced to be traumatic. They consider it to be a normal part of their life or a normal experience, so they may not have the same traumatic impact. But there is, you know, statistically, the vast majority of us at some point across our lifespan will have experienced something traumatic. Whether or not it will have that traumatic impact, meaning that it changes the way that your brain processes, the things that you think, the things that you feel, how your body develops, that, you know, everyone doesn't have that. So it's kind of a spectrum. So some people will have like exposure to a trauma that has a significant impact on their life and a significant impact on their functioning. Other people will have a trauma where it doesn't have a significant impact on their life or their functioning. So you just never know what's going to walk in the door. So you just want to always kind of assume that it's walking in, you know, that someone is going to have, at least some of the kids in the classroom will have that experience. Yeah.
Which also brings you to the next point. If I may not have had a serious, and I'm again on the spectrum, a serious traumatic event in my life, but you have, and we're in the same classroom, and that is having a deep impact on you, whether positive or negative, well, it's kind of impacting me. And depending on the strength of our relationship will determine how much of an impact your traumatic experiences is having on me. So
That's a great point. We call that secondary trauma, which is basically the trauma didn't happen to me directly, but I'm being exposed to something related to the trauma. So teachers, coaches can actually get a secondary trauma exposure when they hear the story or see things that happen to other people. They can begin to have similar symptoms of that trauma response. So you're absolutely correct. Absolutely.
All right. Point for me. All right. Contributed some good to the conversation. Don't count on nothing else good for me because I did my one thing. My one thing. Before we move on to the specifics of trauma in athletics, which led you to create a trauma-informed coaching curriculum, what have been some barriers for teachers as far as understanding their role in dealing with trauma? Teachers like to avoid it. That's been my experience. They just want to not deal with it. What have been some barriers for teachers to make it that way?
Yes. The biggest barrier is that we don't do a good enough job of preparing teachers before they walk into the classroom. So we prepare them based upon, you know, we tell them curriculum and instruction, and we want them to do all of these lesson plans and things. And we basically prepare them for classes that they're never going to see. They're never going to have the quote unquote perfect class where everybody is on grade level, no external circumstances contributing to their behaviors and what have you. So they're conditioned for the quote unquote perfect child. They don't get their, you know, they get a minimal exposure to things like special education and different things like that. But we prepare them for a small percentage of their actual students. So I think that's the biggest barrier. And most teachers like to be experienced. So they want to avoid it because it's something that feels foreign to them or feels unfamiliar to them. Most of the teachers that I work with didn't have a problem with expressing compassion, having empathy, providing care. They didn't have a problem with that. They really, the problem where they struggled is, how do I still teach and be compassionate? How do I still make sure that they get the lesson that they need to get if I'm, you know, letting them sleep in class because they didn't sleep last night? You know, how do I do both things well? So that's where most of the teachers, I think, you know, have struggled, which obviously when you're talking about athletics, you know, your goal is to win the game. So you do want to make sure that you're still able to win games. So it's, you know, if we've been doing the same things or doing certain things a certain way, I'm asking you to change that. You're saying, okay, I'm willing to change, but I don't want to start losing. So the question is how, and that's usually the piece of the puzzle that's missing. A lot of schools do a great job of, you know, telling teachers and giving them instruction on, this is what trauma is, this is why it matters. But then when it comes time to apply it and say like, okay, how do I do this day in, day out? What do I do when this happens? What do I do when that happens? That's the piece of the puzzle that's typically missing.
So now correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't think I am. I bet not be for my sake. When you talk about the how, we, AKA you, created a program to deal with the how. Is that correct?
Right. So, you know, my frame of reference is we need the right amount of information. We need the right amount of inspiration, but we always got to have that supported application. So you've got to, you know.
Say that again, please.
So we need the information. So we need the right amount of information. We need the right amount of inspiration. So we need to be inspired, but then we got to have supported application. So what a lot of times will happen is we'll have people read a book. Okay, great. So now you have the information, but you don't know how to apply it. okay? Or we'll say, we'll have somebody come and tell a really moving story. We'll have a great public speaker come in and they'll talk about their traumatic childhood and how they overcame it. And now teachers are super duper inspired, but they don't have any information, right? And if you want to bring in a coach or someone to provide you with that support, if they are coming in and trying to teach and inspire all at the same time, it kind of overwhelms the process. So you want to have the right amount of information provided, and you want to make sure that it encourages them that yes, you can make an impact, and here's why this is really a powerful thing to do. But then as people apply that, as they take that information and try it out, as they, get inspired and take a certain action, as they, kind of stumble a little bit and get up and try again, if they've got somebody who's been there and done that before alongside them, then we can have that transformation. So I say inspiration plus information with some supported application leads to transformation.
I have nothing to add to that beautiful, so I ain't gonna add to it. I'm just gonna move on by saying the curriculum you created, the trauma-informed coaching curriculum, has those three ingredients to a perfect balance. That's absolutely a statement. That's not a question. That's a statement. I'm letting the folks know what Chikandi has to offer is exactly what Sister Day just said. We created a curriculum that has information, inspiration, and support. Again, at the perfect recipe to help you understand what trauma is, deal with it in day-to-day situations in your life, deal with it enthusiastically, not deal with it from a point of, I have to do this. You get to do this. You get to make a positive impact on the student athletes you're working with, which is the whole point of you coaching. At least I hope it is. And the support. We definitely have resources and vehicles for support to make sure you're implementing the program with fidelity, but also at a high level to make sure you're getting the highest return. And just a little shameless plug, because coaches, I want you to know the value we're offering, we're adding for you coaches is more time for you to spend actually coaching football, wrestling, or whatever your sport is. You're going to be dealing with the X's and O's and management of the program from a broader perspective of dealing with issues you want to deal with, as opposed to a reactionary method of dealing with that issues you have to deal with because a kid went out and made a poor choice, and kids always make poor choices. But as you increase what we're talking about here, the frequency and the severity of those poor choices greatly, greatly decrease. So coaches, we're talking about winning, and we're talking about having a positive impact in the child's life trajectory, overall well-being. So not only are you going to win more, the kids are going to do better in the classroom. They're going to be better in their relationships with their friends. They're going to be better in relationships at home. Like, your kids are going to be better sons, better daughters, like the whole shebang. So I'm excited about the partnership here. What you've been able to develop?
Most of us who've been around youth sports any length of time, and I'm not a coach, I'm not an athletic coach, but I think anybody who's been around youth sports has a cautionary tale about a great athlete whose life off the field prevented him from reaching his full potential. This is about really setting the stage to protect kids so that doesn't happen. That's really what we're talking about.
So a term you use right there, reaching a full potential. I love using the term self-actualization because that's a concept I've loved, which it just means reaching full potential.
Right.
But I just like those words. So I just know we're talking about the same thing, and I'm not saying that for you, but when I talk about self-actualization, and that's the whole, because the tagline for Chikandi Consultant is self-actualization through academics and athletics. The whole self-actualization is about fulfilling one's potentials, which brings me back to a point I made in episode number one, as far as coaches' beliefs about their student athletes, in particular, Black student athletes.
Well, I think that, one of the things that I would assume a coach might be concerned about, right? So just kind of thinking about what might be a concern that they have is the things that they've always done, having to shift or change the things that they've always done. And I think right now, particularly, you know, as we're coming through, you know, on the other side of this pandemic, we have kids who essentially had like a 2-year gap where they weren't getting that typical development that they might have been able to get. So they weren't having those social interactions the way that they might have been having them. They might have had, you know, I know a lot of kids were super transient during that time. They were just, you know, moving from house to house, just staying with family members and things like that. So as you realize that these kids have had these different challenges, you may have to make some adjustments to the way that you're doing things, but you want to speak to the spirit of what you really want to do. And I think you kind of touched on that point, which is, I don't, you know, coaches want to win, but they also want to have an impact on that life. So as you're thinking about how do I justify making, you know, the time investment, the financial investment, it's really about, you know, how am I preparing myself for 2022 and beyond? Because, you know, things that kids need to know in this, you know, at this time is a little bit different. And we do need to make sure that this isn't just about us helping them, but it's about them helping each other too. You know, if you are exposing all of your players to this awareness of trauma, they'll be able to recognize that in each other, and they can support each other as well. So we're talking about developing people, students, student athletes, and all the tools that we can use. You know, we want to use everything we have at our disposal.
I have a question for you. This goes back again to the last episode. This is a question I posed to the larger audience, and it was evidence of an example of a school specifically in which the Black student population is thriving and everyone else is suffering. Have you ever heard of such an institution?
I can't say that I have any data to speak to that. I won't say that it doesn't exist, but I will say that I don't have any data that would speak specifically to that.
I too said the same thing. I mentioned that just because I don't know about it, I'm not arrogant enough to assume it doesn't exist. I did state that based on my experience, I'd be hard placed to find a school where the Black population is thriving and other people are suffering. Generally speaking, in my experience, and I'm not saying this is the rule for everyone, this is based on my experiences, Black people have generally performed the worst, no matter what setting I've worked in. I mean, it's been private independent schools with some of the richest residents in the city and in Hamilton County, for those who know anything about the greater Indianapolis area. But there's also been some schools where the families have been toward the bottom end of the socioeconomic ladder. But in all those settings, it's generally been the Black boys who's had the most struggles. And I've never, ever heard of a situation where Black boys are performing at the highest level and everyone else, no one else seems to be able to get it right. So I just wanted to know if you had an experience in that. And from what I heard, the answer is no.
Yeah, I don't have any specific data that I would point to on that. I would definitely say if we were to target, right, specifically target African-Americans, you know, students, be they male or female, I would say there's probably some evidence that would suggest by targeting the students who are performing maybe below their full potential, that you also have the ability to continue to support students who are performing at their potential. So there's sometimes what people will say is, you know, I can't go back and get the lowest performing students because I leave everyone else behind. But typically, if you structure your program appropriately, you can get everybody to see gains. If you structure it appropriately, making sure that you don't leave anybody behind does generally make sure that everybody can kind of keep up. And that doesn't mean that everybody will reach the same level, you know, people going to reach the level.
Everybody's not the same person. Like everybody's
correct.
Not
but,
the
but
same. So we're not trying to get everybody. Yeah.
Right. They have the greater potential.
So I love what you're saying because that is in direct concert with the idea of the program enhancement plan to ensure that every student athlete is having that life transformative experience. Student athlete. It's not every player is going to make it to the NFL. Every player is going to make it to the NBA. Every player is going to get a straight A. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about creating an environment where every player has the ability and the motivation to want to be the best versions of them in that particular space time. That's the deal.
Right.
That's the whole Chikandi deal. So to know that you've created a curriculum and that we are using that curriculum to support coaches in doing this, like everybody is hearing this organic conversation about like-minded who have come together to create something that is going to benefit everyone in the program. Everyone in the program, and yes, we're focusing on Black boys, and for a girls team, it'll be Black girls, but everybody benefits, unless you in a position to where your whole reason to be is to exploit those in oppressed systems, because if you don't want Black people to be successful, then you're very comfortable where you are right now, and what we're talking about is of no interest to you. But if you, a human being, and you're interested in helping other human beings enjoy their human experience, and especially in the coaching realm, then what we're talking about is just for you, just for you. And since Day has done a fabulous job in creating the program, and I think she's done a fabulous job presenting it here. One last thing before we go.
Okay.
Can you provide, if you haven't already, a concrete example? Like, as a coach, one of the things I've dealt with that drove me crazy, when I put it in context, like I understood there was a larger problem to it. That's what drove me crazy. But it was just the apathy and understanding the history and the value of the formal education to the Black community. And what I mean by that is, when I was a teacher in the classroom, when a brother, anybody for that matter, but especially a young brother, would put their head down on their desk, I would remind them, when you do this, you dishonor our ancestors. Like, people fought and died and lost limbs and life was taken for you to have the opportunity to learn how to read. And you going to sleep right now is a dishonor to our ancestors. But there's a larger disconnect to that. You know what I mean? It's not like this kid doesn't care about his grades. Like, everybody wants to do well. Everybody wants to be smart. You know what I mean? Like, the rare bird doesn't. But I understood there was something more to it. How would you deal with that situation in working with a coach? If I can kind of put you on the spot, because that, in my opinion, that's a real life situation. Like, this kid doesn't understand what's at stake here. What traumatic impact or traumatic events have caused this person to not care about the formal education like he or she should, in my opinion?
Yeah, so I think the question that I would kind of pose is, you know, the goal here is to meet people where they are and not lead them there, right? So where they are may not be in a position where they want to reach their fullest potential. Maybe they just want to be on the team. You know what I mean? So you've got to figure out where people are first to and then help them to set a goal. That's really the bottom line there. So in those instances where, let's say that, and I'm not going to go into specific details about things like, you know, mental health diagnoses and so forth, but let's just assume that there is a student who, let's say, he's coming out for the team, but it's obvious he's not pushing himself. He's really just kind of showing up, just kind of going through the motions, right? And you're thinking, this kid has a lot of potential. I know maybe, you know, other family members were, you know, showed their potential or what have you. He's got a great opportunity. Why is he not using his potential to the fullest? The question is, does he know what his potential is? What fears does he have about his potential? What questions does he have about what he could accomplish? So the goal there, to me, would be not to just instruct them or give them the information, you know, so to speak, about the opportunity they have, but it's about helping them to dream a bigger dream for themselves. Most of our kids will dream of being in the NFL or dream of being in the NBA, but they don't really believe that's something possible for them. They might need a goal that's a little bit closer to where they are to help them stay the course and stay motivated. So maybe you really, you know, you really, really want to be in the NBA. Okay, well, you're probably not going to be in the NBA if you didn't make it on your high school team. Maybe you can't make it on the
really?
High school team because you can't keep your grades up. So then I'm going to tie your turning your homework in into your being able to come and at least watch practice. Maybe I can't get you eligible to participate yet, but I care enough about you that if you show me you turned in your homework, I'm going to let you watch these plays. when you get your grades up, I'm gonna let you put on the practice gear, even if you're not eligible to start, you know, and you kind of work with them with a goal that they can't actually attain. A lot of times what happens, particularly when we're talking about trauma, is that a person who's been beat down by a situation, they might give you that bare minimum. They're not gonna go all the way out because the possibility of being disappointed is so painful for them, they almost sabotage themselves. So you wanna set them up with a goal that's achievable, and that will allow them to meet that goal. Then you can move that, you know, we call it move the chain. You move the chain a little bit farther.
Right.
Once
absolutely.
They have met that goal. So maybe they are only getting that 1 yard, you know, the hard yard, you know, but they get that 1 yard. Okay, well, now we're going to get another one. A lot of times we feel like in our programs, we don't have the time for that, but that's where those big gains, like those monumental changes occur, because that kid who, he, you know, he may never make it to the NFL, but because you took that time with him, now he's a better brother. Now he becomes a better father. Now he becomes a better mentor to someone else in the future. So, you know, this isn't just about achieving ultimate success. It's about, you know, how can we get everybody to be able to be a contributing member to society and be the best that they can be.
Which is the definition of success. If you're the best version of you, that is success. Like,
absolutely.
If I'm doing me the best that I can do me, like, whew, like, what else is it? Like, what else, like, literally, what else is it to this experience other than me being me the best I can be? You brought up another term in talking about this particular issue. So first of all, thank you for the feedback on how you've handled that. I greatly, 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 greatly appreciate those details. Because one of the things you did in responding was your frame of reference. And I don't know if you did it intentionally, probably did, because you are an intentional person, but you used the term mental health issues. Like, you don't want coaches, you know, trying to address mental health issues. But I do believe in my heart that kids not performing to their fullest potential, especially in the classroom, is a mental health issue and not a disciplinary issue. If a kid is checked out in his education, in his formal education, for whatever reason, that is not go to the office so I can kick you out of school. That is, we got to get to the root of this problem while this young child has checked out on such an important part of his or her future. And I ain't talking about subscribing to the curriculum that they're teaching. That's different. I'm talking about investing in yourself so that you can, again, reach your best you, whatever that may be. I believe that's a mental health issue. That's a sickness. I don't care about learning. I don't care about growing. Well, the opposite of learning and growing is dying. And that's not, in my opinion, I don't think that's the human nature. The human nature is about growth and expansion. But that's another show for another day. Anything else for the good of the cause regarding trauma-informed coaching, regarding the curriculum Chikandi is encouraging coaches to tap into as a resource? Anything else for the good of the cause that you believe we should include?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that I want to make sure we walk away with is we're not asking people to, you know, completely throw out your program. We're not asking you to completely upend everything that we're doing. When you are a coach, you look at a player and you have a coach's eye, right? And you can see their potential. You can see their, you know, where what they need to work on, what they, you know, are strongest in, and you can figure out where that player needs to be based upon your coach's perspective. What we're asking coaches to do is also to put on that lens of having a trauma-informed perspective so that you can see what they might need in relationship to trauma. How you might structure some of the things in your program because you know that some of your kids have this history of trauma. This is also, you know, and I think that not only helps with the development of players, but in terms of the development of your program, your fellow staff members, your volunteers, really and truly, all of that can be influenced by this information. Your interactions with people in your family, in your community, you know, this isn't just about your player development, but it's really about giving you this extra tool that you can use in every area of your life.
I like to frame it, this is about using athletics for human development. And this is a resource to promote that. So thank you for saying that, because again, you're dropping dimes. So coaches specifically, as you assess your players, you know your players, you should know your players, and do a real assessment, what traumatic events and what are the impact, because as you get into the curriculum, you learn that chronic trauma, and talk about the two kinds of trauma, one that happens in the now and it's over with, and one that happens over a long period of time.
So that acute trauma or that complex trauma. So acute trauma is what's happening right now, and then complex trauma is what's happening like over time. So things that have happened repeatedly or different kinds of trauma that mix in together.
And that's for free, coaches. So think about trauma from those two different perspectives from your players and quantify, like, how much trauma are you dealing with? And if you ain't dealing with the trauma, be very, very clear. It is dealing with you. So we're going to create an environment to where we can proactively put in structures to help student athletes deal with their trauma, and also coaches to support them, so that you, coach, can focus on coaching and the players can focus on actually playing, because that is why they're there. They want to play your sport. I mean, they probably want to win, and that's what we're going to help do. So, Sister Day, last thing before we go, you got a lot going on. Talk a little bit about what you do and how folks can get a hold of you for your services.
Yeah, so my big push this year, I released my new app, Think and Grow Well. So it is an app that provides you with mental health resources in the palm of your hand. But my real big push for this year is getting that app in the hands of as many people as I can. And I'm asking a lot of churches to add to what they are doing by becoming more trauma-informed. Just like we know athletics, you know, coaches have access to students who have this history of trauma. We know that people are coming to church every Sunday morning and they have this history of trauma. And I want every ministry leader to be equipped to support that work. So that's the big focus for me in 2022. So people can reach out to me via my website, which is cavalinday.com, or find me on LinkedIn as well. And we have lots and lots of access to resources that can support the work that you're doing. As a mental health advocate and a trauma-informed coach, I work with mental health therapists, you know, on a daily basis. I'll tell you this, there is more need than there are therapists available for the need. So we need everybody to be well-equipped with tools and resources to encourage and support each other, the same, you know, village mentality that we've always had. We need everybody to be equipped in the village so that those of us who provide more intentional, you know, intensive support can do that as needed. But a lot of what we can do is just each and every one of us, you know, equipping ourselves with the tool. So that's my goal.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So please, please, please download the app and share it. Share it and get the word out there so that we can create a community of folks who are trauma informed so that we can support one another. But I also tell you, the more you understand trauma, the more your personal walk, and it's not me talking to you, Sister Day, it's me talking to our larger audience, the more you understand about trauma and how it impacts people, you can't help but understand trauma and how it's impacted your personal journey, and you start to deal with that. So this truly, truly, truly benefits everybody, except those who want to live in trauma, because you have a perfect reason to cry about whatever you're crying about. So if you wallow on in sorrow, this probably ain't for you. But if you're a champion ready to take your game to the next level, please, please, please reach out to Chikandi Consultant, Sister Day Consultant. That ain't the name of her business. She just told you what it was, but she's Sister Day to me, and she's my consultant, and I'm appreciative for it. So on that end, Braden, I think I didn't talk enough. So I'm going to ask that this be the end of the interview.
All right, all right, all right, all right. Those of you still with us, thank you. As we get to wrapping up the show, I do hope that the information presented through the conversation with Ms. Day was enhancing. Coaches, parents, humans, that's all of you. This information is enlightening for all, enhancing for all. So please reach out to Chikandi so that we can partner to ensure that every student athlete in your program is having that life-enhancing, life-transformative, athletic, academic experience you, coach, you signed up to provide. Let's create that environment together. That leads me into this episode's call to action. Coaches, I provided for you a link on www.chikondi.net, C-H-I-K-O-N-D-I, chikondi.net, a link to a survey just simply asking what issues are pressing on your team. I'm not asking for your name, not asking for your team. I'm just simply asking you to contribute to a bank of issues that we can look to proactively deal with. There are a variety of ways to share with you coaches what we do. So please, please reach out and share how we can help. The Chikondi Podcast Show will move to a bi-weekly production. We'll look to update the podcast with fresh content every other Monday from this point on. So please, please visit www.chikondi.net. Also check us out on the social media handles, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. Look forward to connecting with like-minded souls and building a community, again, to ensure that all are having an enhancing experience. Until the next time, be well.